macroscopic description of a system and the microscopic description. And usually this connection is made through statistical mechanics, but we wanted to avoid using probabilities. So instead of using ensemble averaging, we have used space-time averaging. And mainly we wanted to find an expression for the fields of temperature and entropy in terms of space-time averages of microscopic quantities. So first I'm going to talk about the microscopic model that we have used, which is based on particle mechanics. Then I'll move on to describe the macroscopic model, in which we have used continuum thermal mechanics. Then I'll talk a little bit about space-time averaging, which we've used to connect the two models. And then I'll speak a little bit about entropy. Actually, entropy turned out to be quite interesting because the expression for entropy is quite different from that of the other continuum fields. And that will also affect the concept of reproducibility and the second law of thermodynamics. So I'll speak a little bit about that. And then I will end the talk with some conclusions. So let's start with the microscopic model. Here we have modeled the system as a set of point masses with properties position, velocity, mass, and force. And these satisfy the Newton-Euler equations here. The Newton-Euler equations. But as we can see, these equations will not be enough to determine all the independent fields here. All the unknown fields. So we're going to need some additional equations. And for that, we can use the fact that the forces are considered to be dependent on the position and velocities. And we can describe these relations through what we call microscopic constitutive equations. These are equations that differ depending on the characteristics of the system in question. And they have a general form like this. Here we have used this notation to indicate that the forces can depend not only on the instantaneous values of the positions, but also on their past values and on their derivatives. So we define a macro state as a set of instantaneous values of the independent variables, and we denote it by mu zero. We have a corresponding macroscopic trajectory that we denote by mu of t, and it is determined by the initial microstate. So moving on to describe the macroscopic model. Here, thermodynamics is considered to be a field theory, which aims to find the fields of mass, density, velocity, and temperature, and they are used to describe the deformation and motion of a body. And in addition, a body has the properties energy, heat flow, stress, and entropy. And all these fields satisfy the following balance laws. This is the balance of mass, balance of momentum, balance of angular momentum, and balance of energy. But as we can see here, we have the same situation as in the macroscopic model. These balance equations would not be enough to determine all the unknown fields. So we're going to need some additional equations. And here we can also use that we have a dependence. So these fields will depend on these fields. And we can describe this dependence in terms of macroscopic constitutive equations. And they have this general form here. And we can see that the dependent fields will depend not only on the instantaneous values of the independent fields, but also on their past values, and possibly on their derivatives as well. And we impose some restrictions on these constitutive equations. Most importantly, they must be such that the Clausius-Joule inequality is satisfied for every process also satisfying the balance relations. And the Clausius-Joule inequality is essentially just a different way of expressing the second law of thermodynamics. So it states that the net entropy production is always non-negative. These first two terms here represent the rate of change in internal entropy, and these last two terms represent the entropy flow. So Q here is the heat flux through the surface, while this Q is the heat supply provided from outside of the system. And there's an important difference in how we interpret this expression here and how it is interpreted traditionally. So traditionally, it is seen as a restriction of processes that a body can undergo. So that would be the values of the independent fields. But here, instead, we see it as a restriction on the constitutive equations when we leave the process arbitrary. So traditionally, the constitutive equations are found by experiments, and then the entropy inequality will restrict the allowable processes. But here, we say that the entropy inequality restricts the constitutive equations, and as a result, all processes will be allowable. So, moving on to define a macrostate. It is the list of independent fields, and it could possibly include their values at earlier times. So I've given two examples. It could be this list of independent fields, from times from T1 to T0. Or it could be a list of independent fields, including some of the derivatives at the present time. That would, for example, be the case if we're dealing with a system with short-range memory. And we say that the past values of the independent fields are called histories, and the particular history dependence is determined by the macrostate form, and that is determined by the constitutive equations. So the constitutive equations will determine what kind of macrostate that we have. So this is just an overview of the two models that I have described. So both of them can be used to describe a physical system. And we want to connect them through space-time averaging. So averaging procedures will always be necessary when we treat measurements, because measurements can never be precise. So if we make repeated measurements on an identical system, we will have fluctuations. And then we need to use statistical methods. But if our measurements are not accurate enough to observe these fluctuations, then we will not need to use statistical methods. So then space-time averaging will be equivalent to ensemble averaging. And then space-time averaging is actually preferable because it's simpler and it doesn't treat probabilities that we do not need. So a space-time average can be represented in general in this form, where y is some continuum field and yi is a property of a point mass pi. So it could, for example, be their mass, kinetic energy, or momentum. And phi here is a weighting function. We're going to consider the simplest case, where phi is just 1 over v delta t, where v is the volume around x, and delta t is the time interval around t. And for particles outside of this volume and times outside of the time interval, phi is just going to be 0. So we can find the space-time averages for the independent continuum field, starting by the mass density. So the mass density will just be the sum of the masses present within a region during some time interval, and then divided by the volume of that region and the duration of the time interval. So it's pretty simple. Then we have the velocity. It will just be the average, the space-time average of the momentum divided by the space-time average of the density. And the temperature will just be the average kinetic energy divided by the particle density. Then we're going to have some constant in front. It comes from the equipartition theorem. But what we can note here is that we can determine all these fields given a particular microstate. But this is not the case for entropy. So we're going to look at that now. We can start by noting that a special microstate will determine the macrostate, but the macrostate will not be completely defined until we specify also the macrostate form. And in contrast, a specified macrostate will determine a set of possible microstates. And we denote this set by R, and it will correspond to a region or to a volume in phase space that we call omega. So then we can use Boltzmann's well-known formula for entropy. This one right here, KBO and omega, which I'm sure all of you know. So if we want to use that to define entropy as a space-time average, we need to define the phase space volume omega, which we can do if we specify the macrostate and zero. So if we do that, we should be able to define the entropy given a particular microstate. And we can see this as, if we specify the microstate, it will enable us to determine the values of the independent fields. But we will not know which of these fields to include in the macrostate. So for that, we're also going to need the constitutive equations so that we can determine the macrostate form, and then we will know which values to include into the macrostate. So if we have both the specification of the microstate and the constitutive equations, we can define the macrostate, and then we can determine the phase volume, which will give us the entropy. And this is quite important. So we can try to understand it better if we first neglect the macroscopic theory completely and just imagine that we have a partition of phase space into different regions. These regions will have no meaning. It will just be sets of microstates which have no relation. And we can assign a numerical value to each of these regions, K, L, and omega. This numerical value will still have no meaning because none of these regions have any particular meaning. We can also introduce the macroscopic theory, and then we can determine values of the macroscopic variables, but we will still have no meaning because we will not know which of these values correspond to which region. But if we also specify the macrostate form, then we can sort of see that as a map saying that, okay, these values belong to this region, these values belong to this region, so we will have a meaningful partition, and then we can also give a meaning to the numerical value, and we can define entropy. So we're going to look at an example of how this reasoning works. So it's a simple example of an ideal gas, for which we know that the constitutive equations will have this form. So here I've just used a more compact notation for the constitutive equations. So psi here can be any of the dependent fields. And we have no history dependencies here. So the macrostate will look like this. It will just be the instantaneous values of the mass density and the temperature. And then we can define the entropy by using Boltzmann's formula. So this is specific entropy. This is the phase-based volume. We can simplify it in this way, where C is just a constant determined by the mass of the particles and the number of particles. And then we can just, by inserting the space-time average values for the mass density and the temperature, find the space-time average for entropy. So we have actually now found an explicit expression for the entropy as a space-time average of molecular quantities. And that was what we were looking for. So that's pretty good, because this could be used, for example, in molecular dynamic simulations. And it's also something that, as far as I know, have not been done before. However, it is just a special case, so this is only valid for the ideal gas. So if we have a more complicated system with history dependencies, this expression will be a lot more complicated. So if we want to find a similar expression for a more complicated system, that is not something I'm going to attempt to do, because it will be very complicated. But we can try to just visualize how it will look like in phase space. So it would say that we have some values of the macroscopic variables at time t0, representing this region here. And then at some later time, we have different values of these variables. So then if we would not consider history dependencies, the macrostate at time t1 would just be this region right here. But if we say that we have some constitutive equations that would determine the macrostates like this. So it's a list of the independent variables at time t0 and time t1. Then we must also consider how this region has evolved. So this microstate would be the intersection here. And obviously that intersection will always be smaller than the red region. So we can conclude that considering history dependencies will decrease the entropy compared to when we are not considering history dependencies. So I'm just showing this to illustrate that considering history dependencies will actually influence the entropy. So now I want to speak a little bit about reproducibility. So if we consider an initial state of a closed system, we have some initial microstate mu0 and an initial microstate m0. It corresponds to this region r0 in phase space. Then if we let this state evolve, At some later time, it will occupy a different region, R prime. And if we want this change of state to be experimentally reproducible, we must have that all microstates confined within this region must evolve in such a way so that they are also confined within this region. So something like this. So this is a requirement for reproducibility. We must have that the region RT is completely confined within the region R prime. And this also means that the volume of RT must be less or equal to the volume of R prime. And if we look at the macroscopic evolution, we have that the volume of R0 is equal to RT. And that is because of Liouville's theorem, which states that under such a transformation, the phase volume is preserved. So it might change its shape, but the volume will still remain the same. So if we combine this with the reproducibility requirements, we will have this relation, that the volume of R0 is less or equal to the volume of R prime. So that means that the volume of the initial microstate must be less or equal to the volume of the final macrostate. And since these volumes are related to the entropy, we have just stated that the entropy must always be increasing, which is just the second law of thermodynamics. So the second law actually follows from the reproducibility requirement. And so, some conclusions. We have seen that the entropy cannot be defined a priori, and here we mean that it cannot be defined until we specify the macrostate completely, so including the macrostate form. So I've shown that if we specify a macrostate, we can determine the independent fields, but this is also valid for the dependent fields, except for the entropy, because for the entropy we have a different case, so we need to specify both the macrostate and also the macrostate form. And we can relate the concepts that I've been talking about. So starting from the Clausius-Duhem inequality, which determines the constitutive equations, which are essential to determine the macrostate form, which we need to find the entropy. Entropy is related to reproducibility, and reproducibility actually lies behind the second law, or the Clausius-Duhem inequality. So we have a closed cycle here. So there are reasons to believe that the way that the Clausius-Duhem inequality restricts the constitutive equations is related to the way that states have to evolve in phase space in order to ensure reproducible behavior. And also we've seen that the second law must be a restriction on the constitutive equations rather than on processes. And this is because if we have no constitutive equations, we will have no macrostate form, and then we cannot determine the entropy. If we have no entropy, we will have no reproducibility. And reproducibility is really essential for the macroscopic theory, because if we have no reproducible behavior, we will not be able to predict any macroscopic behavior or have any knowledge of the macroscopic behavior. And then we would not even have such a thing as a macroscopic theory. So this is an essential point. So thank you very much for listening. 'Kay, the requirement for reproducibility is really that I'll do this again. If we have a region here, R0, and it represents the initial macrostate that we have, at a different time, the macroscopic evolution will take the macrostate into this region, R prime.
Because I don't really understand. So macroscopic evolution operates on the macroscopic variable, so it's not in this. So this phase space is for the microstate, right?
Yeah.
Because this So basically it's just coordinates and velocities.
Yeah.
So how do you correspond this macroscopic evolved state? How do you define the correspondence onto this microstate phase space?
I'm not sure if I really understand, but so these are in this region we have all the microstates that correspond to the initial macrostates.
Okay, and in that region you have all the microstates that correspond to the final microstate.
Exactly,
right.
Exactly. So all the microstates.
The evolution of the macrostate.
Yeah, exactly. So this is the macrostate evolution. So if we look at the microscopic evolution, we must have that all the microstates in this region must be confined within this region. Because if we would not have this, if we say that, okay, some microstate in this region might be found here, then that we would observe a different macroscopic behavior. And then we would not have reproducibility. So they must be confined within this region. Because we want reproducible behavior, every time we prepare a system in a certain way, we must observe the same behavior at a later time. And we would not have that if we didn't have this requirement. So that is what we mean by reproducibility. And it will also be a consequence the second, or it will then lead to the second law.
So it's not possible for the same macrostate to always be different somehow.
How do you mean by that?
There could be two different microstates in the same macrostate.
Two different microstates within the same macrostates?
Yeah.
That leads to two different? No.
I just say this is not allowed.
Because if some of the microstates would evolve into here, we would observe different macroscopic behavior. Then we would observe a different macroscopic behavior. So
we are supposing here that there are sort of two observers. One is observing the system at a gross scale. And he has a theory to describe it. It means he can give initial values, and he's deterministic, so he observes some final values. And then it means every time he prepares the system macroscopically in a given way, he knows what's going to be. Because he has a... Exactly, yeah, we are assuming that. It's like hydrodynamics or thermodynamics. So we assume that this observer has this. The fact that the macroscopy observer has a deterministic theory means, from a microscopic point of view, that we must have that behavior. If we didn't have that behavior, it means that the macroscopic observer, for some initial conditions, then in a future time would observe something. And in another experiment, just preparing the system the same way, he would observe something else. Then he would have a non-deterministic system, of course. I don't know, chaos or turbulence or something like that. So the fact that he has a macroscopic reproducible theory, that which is great.
Yes, okay, that's the point. So it's a deterministic.
Absolutely, yeah. Yes. That's also why we don't need the statistical mechanics. Basically, we are not observing fluctuations.
Is it true that there are microscopic states that will have unusual evolutions? Usually you don't see everything.
Yeah, the gas molecules in this room could collect in the top right corner.
Speaking, it doesn't make any the microscopic evolution is not satisfy that. Right?
Yeah. Do you want to?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I get, but. I guess this is true for most microstates, but it's not like there is some error marginal or whatever you can call it. I'm not sure if that's what you're after.
So it's really a statistical statement.
There's some probability implied there now.
I guess there would be in that case. I'm not sure if you have a better explanation.
Yeah. Basically, you have two. Some space, phase space regions are sort of outlawed because you could prepare the system in a strange way and then you don't observe your expected microscopic behavior, of course. And also, you must count that every macroscopic theory has some range of validity. So you, even, I don't know, just take a Newton's equation to describe the solar system. You know that when you obtain a solution, it's valid for a given time, and then after that, you start to get errors. That's a normal phenomenon in each macroscopic theory. So that, as well, is valid so up to a given time. But usually, for the phenomena you are speaking about, the air here collapsing to a point, you have to wait for a long time.
Yeah,
so
sure,
that's
sure.
Outside the range of the theory.
No more questions?
Is that true that I understand? So the last point that you said, so you have to wait for a long time. And this is outside the validity of this theory. But then, you are assuming the body hypothesis here, right?
No, absolutely not. That's the main point. Yeah.
Okay, so you're not assuming it. Okay.
No. Indeed, that's why we are taking time averages as well.
Mm-hmm.
So this theory actually could describe time fluctuations.
Mm-hmm.
At a macroscopic level. So what it does cannot treat is fluctuations when you repeat that measurement or the experiment in the same conditions. And then you observe different results each time. There are these two different kinds of fluctuation. One is a time fluctuation, and this can reproduce it because it's describing the system in time. And the other one is a sort of ensemble fluctuation, and then, of course, that cannot do it because we are not using probability theory there. Then you need probability, so an ensemble over phase space.
Sorry, I'm still in your
That's all right. Okay, no more questions?
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.